you doing here? This is a combat zone. It's restricted. Ease off on your main thruster and head over to patreon.com/SWOCBC for episodes of our all-new series, Inside the Insider, where the gang explores articles from every single issue of the official Star Wars Insider fan magazine in order and get an even closer look at how Star Wars and its fandom have evolved over the years. New episodes with each public upload months earlier for patrons. Red 24, Red 30, follow me to patreon.com/SWOCBC for the latest episode of SWAT Box, Inside the Insider today. In target range, it's ahead. All ships jump to light speed.
The Star Wars Old Canon Book Club is made possible by contributions on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/SWOCBC for ad-free episodes, reading guides, movie and TV episode audio watch-alongs, and more. Today's Old Canon Fact of the Day comes from A Guide to the Star Wars Universe, second edition by Bill Slavicek, first published in 1994. The Jedi Code is the philosophy that sums up the belief of the Jedi Knights. There is no emotion, there is peace. There is no ignorance, there is knowledge. There is no passion, there is serenity. There is no death, there is the Force. Today's selection is Star Wars, the original Marvel Years, Volume 3 by Archie Goodwin, Al Williamson, Wally Lombego, Carlos Garzon, and Larry Hama, among others, whose latest issue was first published in July of 1982. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you, always.
Welcome back, my rebel commandos, to the Star Wars Old Canon Book Club. This is still episode 15, part 2 of the 15th episode, halfway, so you can easily split it between now and
nothing and Zahn.
And the Zahniverse. Jesse, I didn't know that you met Timothy Zahn.
I did. He signed my book.
Tell me more.
And gave you, like, audiobook tins?
Yeah, that have the audiobooks in them for the new Thrawn trilogy. Yeah, I was at Indie Pop Con with you, sir.
Okay.
And that while you guys were on stage doing a thing.
I can't believe, when, was this during?
This was before
no,
COVID.
Chilluminati. Oh, this was not the one we went to.
This was like the first time we did Chilluminati at it, right?
Yeah, this is when we're still pumping out Star Wars New Canon Book Club.
Right.
And I was there while you guys were doing something. I don't remember what you were doing, but I was just walking around by myself, and I saw that they had a section with books, and there was just Timothy Zahn, and he was just chilling. And I walked up to him and was like, "You rule!" And he was like, "What?" Looked much older than obviously all the photos of him from the books.
Yeah.
But he's like, thank you so much. Do you want me to sign a thing?" I was like, "Yes! Oh my god!" And he's like, "Okay." So he signed a bunch of stuff, and we talked for a little bit, and I was just like, "You're awesome, dude." And he's like, "Okay, cool, thank you."
So did he say anything like he had to go smoke a joint real quick and he'll be right back?
He did not say that. He was at a booth in the middle of
wherever. So you want to hit these Quaaludes?
Hey, you want to get fucked up out back.
You know where they had the celebrity signings?
Yeah.
He was directly across from them, just chilling. And behind him was the banner, and the banner was just like, "I made Thrawn, bitches." And I was like, "Yeah."
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a humble guy.
He's just like a writer, so he isn't like out there being like, "Look at me, I'm important." He just is like, "Thanks so much for stopping by."
I wonder how much credit he gets, like, in general. Like, I feel like we all know about Heir to the Empire, like, probably if you're listening to this show right now, unless you're just, like, really into the Scary Game Squad, you probably just, like, know about Heir to the Empire. I wonder how much credit Timothy Zahn gets in, like, fandom for, like, basically creating
in our space.
Yeah,
I will say I don't know how much credit he as a person gets personally, like people come up to him, but I do know that what he did was change Star Wars for the better in a way that when I remember seeing footage from the Star Wars Celebration where they showed Rebels and it was the first time Thrawn was in canon and he like appears in the trailer, people lost their mind.
He's beloved
character, like one of truly one of the best Star Wars characters, and he's just from a book. And suddenly now he's in canon. He's on TV now. They got a Mikkelsen doing him.
Like, yeah, like real life Thrawn, yeah. And he's going to be probably the main character of this Filoni.
He is.
Filoni film.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. Filoni Pictures. Filoni film.
That's absolutely crazy to me, but that's a thing. And I'm blown away by it and thrilled that Thrawn is such a big... I hope he does. What I'm saying is I hope he does get the credit for creating a character that stands up with a Solo or a Leia or a Luke. Like this.
Didn't he also just fuck around and drop Mara Jade on everybody too?
Mara Jade, yeah.
And Talon Card.
Yep.
Like it's wild. Like, I think it speaks to like how big Star Wars is, that it's like a lesser character because it's from like not the movies is so popular. Yeah. Like millions and millions of people.
All they had to do was he made a character that was the smartest person in the room. And everyone was like, oh my God, thank God there's a character who's like
evil,
the villain.
Evil Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, who isn't like...
But it's like written by a person that's also intelligent. So yeah. It's not like...
Do you think it's an accident that Thrawn and Zahn rhyme?
Damn, dude.
George Lucas.
Damn.
It all rhymes.
Yeah, see? Look, you see what's happening here? We're forming a theory. You want to know what my next theory is?
What?
Timothy Zahn is the Galactus of the proto-canon. He...
Damn.
Came in. He's the judge. He's Judge Dredd. He came in and he literally was like, you, dead. You, don't exist. You, never happened. You, real. You. And then everybody yes-anded that for like 20 fucking years.
20. I mean, he 100% made it so that everything we're doing right now, he was like, none of it is canon except for the movies.
Yeah.
And those were the rules. Everything that we're reading is non-existent. Past that. Yeah.
Do we know that or do we think that?
I mean, he only based his stuff off the movies.
He didn't like go back and set it in the universe with the rabbit. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he like used the movies as the I'm sure there's things he pulled from other stuff, but like literally it's just it takes place after Return of the Jedi, and I'm gonna add some new stuff, and we're not gonna get let's talk about what's going on in the galaxy with like rabbit people or none of that's there, and then people just forgot it. And so he basically killed it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to think about. I don't know. He seems really influential, but let's do some more Marvel years. We got to get, sure. We're going to hit the ground running. Star Wars 51 is an issue called The Resurrection of Evil. In the vast deep space, the Rebellion's floating headquarters recovers the hull of an X-Wing, which contains a dead Rebel pilot and a dooming message. General Ryken sends out 3 recall transmissions across space to bring heroes of the Rebellion back to base.
Oh, real quick, just something fun. Like, Dodonna was the man. He's out. You never hear from him.
He's
again.
Gone. We never.
Ryken, because he was in Empire, is now the guy, and I don't think he's in Jedi at all.
Dodonna
so.
Drank his ass to death.
No, then it's Ackbar. Like, it's just like they like. It is funny how like, oh, this is the big character. Oh, we don't even like follow up with him. Never mind. Let's bring.
I think it's time for a Disney Plus series. I'm
also, it's like the comics that took place between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, we're like, they know about our base. We need to find a new base. And now it's like, they got Hoth. We need to find a new base. It's still the fucking, like, it's the same
it's all they do.
Engine.
It's all they do, yeah.
I guess if you, I think the one time that they tried to address that was in Rebels, where they were like, oh no, there's like a bunch of Rebel bases. And Hoth is just one of those bases. But it just happened to be the one that Luke, Leia, and Han were at.
Sure.
But, like, they hide out around the... And I was like, that makes so much more sense than, like, all the Rebels have gone to one base to chill out.
Well, I feel like originally they didn't think about it too much, and it was fantasy base. But then in the new canon, it's kind of more like terrorist cells that, like, found each other and started, like, working together.
Yeah.
That all kind of had different ideologies and, like, teamed up.
Yeah, I guess it does make sense because they have a couple... Like, the transport ships are the biggest ships on Hoth, and then you go see...
Suddenly
the,
there's a massive fleet.
Yeah, and you're like, all right, that probably makes sense. Though.
Yeah, and I think it's very clever. There's a lot of things I disagree with new canon, but I think that's probably one of those, like... Well, you were saying, like, we need that Disney Plus show. It's one of the few times where I'm like, okay, that's an explanation I love.
Yeah.
You don't have to explain everything, but that... All right, I'm okay with that. I like
it. It makes it into a galaxy that you can imagine... As a setting.
Plus, it's a massive galaxy, so you wouldn't have...
They do show, like, that it operates in cells.
Yeah.
And with, like, a lot of people not knowing about each other and sometimes fighting each other.
Yeah.
So...
It gets pretty weird in, like, the Rise of Skywalker era when the whole resistance is like on one ship at once. Like you're like
the idea of the resistance.
It's just
in
like,
itself is a it's the Marvel weird
Comics.
Concept.
It's the Marvel Comics Rebellion from 1981. Just in the new canon.
But also the good guys also in the government. But also not.
Yeah.
But also there's like space Nazis. But also they're not in the government. Like it's the more you think about the new stuff, you're like,
the government capital, they blew up the entire structure of the government.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Or something. So,
it rhymes.
So Riken is sending out recall transmissions to get everybody back to base. They find this X-Wing that has a dead pilot in it and a bad message. Yada, yada, yada. He's worried, etc. They're on a remote world. We got Leia and 3PO looking for a new rebel base, which we just talked about. And it looks like it's going to be a pretty good place for them. But then they get like attacked by Gundarks, which I think this is the first time we see Gundarks like visually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. They pretty much look exactly how I expect it.
It's just weird because they're like rip an ear off a Gundark, but they... They don't have really... a weird face. Like, they don't... Ears are, like, not...
Maybe that's supposed to be, like, the Star Wars joke that we just never got till now.
It might have been. I was just like... It like, just seems like a fuck-up.
Funniest thing about that is Gundarks don't have ears.
That's why we say it.
That's a little Karelian joke for you guys. Sorry, I have that thick Karelian accent still.
Everyone knows Nerf herders ain't even scruffy.
I'm going to try and soften it up. Try and lose. Can you hear it still? Can you hear my Karelian accent, Chewy?
Hell.
Is my Karelian accent coming through,
Chewy? Compadre.
You from North Karelia?
North Karelia's got a famine going on.
Okay, so they decide, uh-oh, Gundarks, not so good. So they leave, and then they get the recall message from Riken, so they go back. And then there's like another like shitty planet on the other side of the galaxy that Luke's on looking for a rebel base. But the Empire is already there, and these ground troops find him that try to like stop him, and he escapes them. And then he also gets the transmission. So it's just like little character intros. And then same thing with Lando and Chewie. They're looking for somebody called Shemlern, which is very funny because Shemlern looks a lot like Shemlem. And I thought for like half the time that I was reading this that it fucking said
Shemlem.
It doesn't mean anything, but it just like Shem-Lern just visually looks exactly the same as Shemlem. So I was okay. In my like in the same way, you know, like when you read Harry Potter and you're young and you think it's like Hermione for like 5 years.
Yes.
Like,
oh yes.
Same thing. I was like I got like mind blown at the end of this when I realized it was Shemlern. But
maybe I've already shared this story, but the first Harry Potter was read to me by my godmother and she just pronounced Quidditch Gidditch. So for years I was like Gidditch, the Gidditch, wizard right? sport.
You must have got bodied, bro.
I think pretty quickly it was like, oh, that's just incorrect. Okay.
Do you remember the day when you said Gidditch and all your friends never called you back and you got left stranded at the drive-in?
Joke's on those people. They never existed to begin with, so I couldn't have been let down.
Diabletist, if you please.
Oh my god,
That's his new screen name, Diabletist.
Well, the lead is right there. I'm just like,
that's his old screen name.
Redundant.
Yeah. Leet Beatist?
And then you're like, genius isn't appreciated in its time, and years from now, when Diab337ES will be recognized as perhaps the most creative name ever.
They'll probably think you're a diabenius.
Fucking get out of here. Fuck you.
So Shemlern is a gun runner. You might know where Han is. They get the distress beacon from Riken and they let him escape. So they just go back. They're like, fuck it, Shemlem, let's go. And then the rebel cruiser, they're all there. And they hear about this ship called the Tarkin, which is being constructed by the Imperial fleet, which is literally like a plot device from this later bitch. Canon Star Wars in yep. form of the Sun Crusher.
Yes.
I feel like 9,000 more times we're going to see this thing.
One key time that we will see in, you know, CinemaScope, you know, 35 millimeter, very soon, actually. But this was before we knew that the plot of Return of the Jedi involved rebuilding the Death Star.
But this is not the first time that it's been about a super, like, haven't we already encountered, like, three other super weapons?
But not the Death Star again.
Oh, yeah. This one, they were like, well, we don't need, like, the top part of the hemisphere. We just need the gun.
Yeah, exactly.
For this one.
The Sun Crusher.
Yeah, the Sun Crusher, right, yeah. And It has, yeah, it says it has unmatched defensive and flight capabilities and a weapon system that can match the Death Star. Meanwhile, on the Executor, Executor?
It's Executor.
Executor? Executor sounds more like
Executor.
What
Vader, does sound better.
That's
but,
what Vader's up to, right?
He's but his ship's executor? Called the Executor.
Executor.
But the Executor is like the title. The like
the man who gets things done. The yeah. Executor. Yeah. So he finds out that they didn't catch Luke, and he uses the Force to tell a guy to... He like mind controls a man to walk out of the airlock into space, which is fucking crazy. It's hardcore. He just like has a guy walk the plank, but like with mind control, which is like extremely fucked up.
Honestly, for that person, they probably, as far as Vader subordinate killings goes, probably pretty chill because he was like, like he wasn't like, oh fuck. I don't know, you know, just silver lining on that clock.
I have to imagine though, in the last moments of life, he'd probably be like, what am I doing out here?
Yeah.
Oh, how did I
what
get
the
here?
Fuck, it's cold.
That was this is it. Where I parked my car.
What's the movie with Ed no, it's Tim Robbins, maybe? Can't remember. Where
Shawshank
they go to, it's
Redemption.
Like a Disney movie where they go to Mars. Maybe it's called Mission to Mars.
You mean
Rocket Man?
Total Recall?
No, no.
But their faces explode?
That's what I was going to say. They both have scenes where they take off their shit and their like heads explode. But in the Disney one, they like turn to ice.
Which might be more accurate.
Yeah,
I don't know
no
what
idea.
The rules
yeah,
are.
I don't know.
I feel like you don't swell up and your eyes pop out, but maybe you do.
It looked sick.
It was cool.
Think you, I think your face does like swell up.
Let us
but
know.
It wouldn't take 10 minutes or whatever does in Total Recall. We're like, I feel like it'd be quick. You'd be done.
Also,
let me know.
In Total Recall, they're like terraforming. Like the, it feels like where they are and what they're pressed. Oh no, never mind. There was a vacuum, and then they press the button to like
save it. Yeah,
yeah.
It is weird.
Oh, very weird. But it looks great. The practical effects ridiculous.
And let us know what would happen.
Also, shout out to Benny. He's got 5 kids.
That's true. Okay. The other thing about the Tarkin is that it doesn't have the like trench and port exhaust port weakness that the Death Star has because it's just all gun. So they have to get on board to take it down. And so they decide that the best way to do this is to send Luke, Leia, Lando, Chewie, R2, and 3PO as like a commando squad because they were the ones who were on the other Death Star, except Lando wasn't on the Death Star, which is weird that they
this
say that he was because he wasn't.
Such well, he was wearing Han's clothing.
Oh,
the
they
time,
probably just
so
didn't. Yeah.
This is insane to me because it's like a moon-sized facility. But unlike the moon, throughout it, there's people. So it's like a giant area, and they're like, oh, you've been on like 2 streets on this planet, so you're an expert, so you should go to this place that's not that, but it has one key design element that's similar.
If anything, the only experts are R2 and 3PO, who
and
had
pretty,
access
and
to
pretty
like
much
maps.
Just R2.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, but that's fine. He's here. It's all good. So they go, but Leia's like mad at Lando still. She still thinks about Lando as that guy that gave Han to the Empire. So she's like, fuck you, Lando. So then they get to a place called Hakaleg, where they get to the Tarkin from the spaceport. And Luke and Leia find disguises and they dress up like the people who work on the ship. And they try to get on the ship, but they stop. And then Luke like just maybe for the first time successfully uses a mind trick to get on board.
I think he had, I can't remember exactly when, but I think he's used it in like the comics before or like something like suggested.
Splinter of Mind's Eye?
Oh, maybe. This just feels very,
this was
adroit.
One,
he
this
feels
was,
confident.
This was one where, upon reading it, I was like, hey, not like, I don't know that he could do this.
Yeah. You're like, now you believe he's had a little training. Maybe he can do this, right?
Yeah.
So they get on board, they're looking around, but then Vader realizes that Luke is on board and he's like, hold on. And
chill out.
He sends an officer to find Luke, but he like the officer that he sends goes into this other meeting where you find out that the crew of the Tarkin is like tired because Vader keeps fucking murdering people like Ozzel who don't deserve it. And so they, literally decide.
I'm not saying he's a good person. I'm saying that he
was a good officer.
He was a good officer.
That's what I'm saying. Just officers that didn't deserve to be killed. and they're getting together like a Valkyrie situation here. They're trying to like take Vader down.
And this isn't even the first.
He also has a fake ass.
Yeah,
that's true.
He really has a fake ass.
This isn't even the first time this has happened story wise in comics.
Yeah,
there have been multiple times where it's like Imperial officers.
We've got to kill him,
Vader.
This is a good like. This makes sense. I like this.
Yeah. Fun twist. Like fun twist to the end of this plot. Mm-hmm. Like a nice fun complication. Now we're in 52 to take the Tarkin. They get stopped by stormtroopers, and Luke starts to try and talk his way out of it, but Leia just fucking shoots him, and they split up and try to like go it on their own for some fucking reason, probably to like stay safe after they drew attention to themselves, but I wouldn't have split up. Vader hears a report that this happened, and he's like, fuck it. Just let them do whatever they're going to do. Let's see where they're going to go. We're going to catch them. The general that was talking to Vader goes back to his like assassin bros and they're like, yes, yes. When he's distracted with Luke, we will kill him. Yes, yes. And then Lando's hiding in the same compartments that Han and Chewie and Luke hid in the Falcon when they came on the Death Star the first time. And he's like, now... Even though before he was like chastising that dude in the Rainbow Realm for like stepping out on the rebellion, this time he feels like he needs to prove himself to be part of the rebellion. So he's going to like save them basically. And he's like, they're going to love it when I save them when they don't even know I'm here because he's not allowed to be here. So he hears that there's troopers outside the ship and on board the Tarkin, R2-D2 and C-3PO are trying to trick stormtroopers like to come repair the shield generator to like lure them there basically. But Chewbacca just grabs a stormtrooper and throws it at the shield generator and blows up the shield generator, which is fucking exactly what Leia just did with those guards. Which sure. is very funny. But also like a weirdly like very like Star Wars and Indiana Jones vibe thing to do in general. Like indie shooting dudes and stuff like that.
I mean, you know we play in a movie that's played for comedy where R2 and 3PO are like, over here, sir. And then Chewie just gets fed up waiting and then just tosses a guy. And it's like, that's Chewbacca. It feels like it.
Yeah. So Leia's trying to get to an escape pod, but she gets cornered by stormtroopers. But then she kills them all and has like a pretty like brutal fight with them. And then she takes off again. Luke gets to the reactor, but then he feels that like maybe Vader's at the end of the hallway. He gets like a force sense. And just before anything happens with that, an airlock opens by the colonel, which is their plan that they were going to do to like kill Darth Vader. So their plan was to open it and suck Vader into space. But Vader just kind of like man modes. He's just like,
this is sick because like he almost like flies out. But then I think he like channels his rage and then he's like, walks through the vacuum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy.
Which, I don't know, that's just sick to me.
Yeah.
And Luke has to do the same thing, but he's also like hiding. So he loses like the grenade in his pack and Vader kills the colonel that tried to kill him. And that's like what happens with them. Leia gets lost and she's at the ion cannon, which I believe in this case is the Death Star weapon. They called it like the ionic cannon or something like that. And it's red.
They haven't yet between different like Empire Strikes Back, like it, clearly the ion cannon, they have not yet been like ion means like
turn off the
like EMP yeah. effect. It's just a big ass weapon.
That's exactly what it is. I think that's exactly right. She calls all the rebels to meet her at the docking bay. The droids show up. Chewbacca shows up, but Luke is like in a firefight. So R2 like uses his little robot dildo to like close doors so that Luke can like get away from the people that he's fighting. And then Lando is at the Falcon and he like tricks the stormtroopers and confidently yells at them and tells them that this is not the Millennium Falcon and that they're stupid. And it works amazingly. And so then back on the ship, the rebels try to get out. Luke hacks a thing and like it blows up or something. And they're like, oh my God, the rebels, they threw a grenade. And the heroes get out and then the Imperials realize that it's not a grenade. It's actually just like a lure that Luke tied together that's just two walkie-talkies. So I don't even really understand what that was. I don't really understand like what the ruse was there. I didn't actually understand it as I read it, and I don't understand it now. But
just a fake out.
Yeah, it seemed pretty crafty. But like the two communicators, who's talking into them?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, I guess the idea is that the communicators in Star Wars have sort of a grenade-y vibe, and if you put a bunch of them together, it kind of looks like a, I don't know. I don't know. I have no answers
for
you.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, like, think about how—
Is it feedback?
Phones are used in, like, improvised explosive devices.
Sure.
Like, I don't know exactly But I guess just the idea of like, if you just like grenade and you throw it, you are so scared that you just see something and you run.
Were you thinking like some dude was on the other line like,
or like
it's just like Lando like on
backing into each other or something. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what I thought. But yeah, they tried
the sweeps and the creeps.
Raspberry.
They're in the Falcon. They're flying out. I'm sorry. They're in a chase with two TIE fighters. The Falcon rescues them, and then Lando like gets them on board. And he's like, "What do you say, Lando, the guy?" But Darth Vader shows up, so he doesn't have time to gloat. And Luke dumps the water supply of the Falcon, which turns to ice in space. Mission to Mars. And right as Tarkin like starts to fire, it explodes, and everybody's like, "What the fuck? Why did the Tarkin explode?" And Leia was like, I reversed the polarity of the ion cannon or whatever, like, the fuck thing happened. And she was like, all good. Like, just...
Sure.
And that was that.
Yeah, this felt like the Ord Mantell part. Like, it had a lot of the crossover of the weekly ones that was a similar story about, like, the Empire building a secret weapon, which was the Executor, and the, like, commanders trying to, like, take out Vader. And even, like, Luke sensing Vader and stuff. But, like, it felt very, like, slapdash. And, like, I don't know. If you're... I think that the stakes and what they were building were so big for just a throwaway. Like, you would do an arc about
sure.
the Tarkin to make it feel... But when you do these kind of things, it's like, all right, okay.
The I guess stakes they had did not match one. The ambition.
And just the idea of, like, yeah. reversing the polarity is, like... If you're going to go out of the way to be like, we built it with no, like, doesn't have any of the faults of the other ones, the idea that you just flipped a switch and it blew itself up is like...
Leia's really smart, though.
That's true.
I mean, obviously, that's what they were intending to show there.
She's super
smart. And I guess she did have the schematics of the original Death Star delivered to her, or with her, to Donna and stuff. Like,
but still...
Sure, it's just a really crappy way to tell a story.
It's oversimplified, yeah.
Yeah.
She bypassed the compressor.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
Yeah, just like...
All it took was one spanner.
Yeah.
And some time. That was it.
You just have to reroute the...
From the coupling. You take the polarity from the couplings,
yeah.
reroute it with the spanner through the inverted nodes in the reverse polarity chamber, and it's like there, dude.
It's a simple job.
It's
yeah.
open and shut case.
Yeah, I just need a soldering iron and about... $48. It's about as much as like a nice mid-range bottle of whiskey.
Yeah, dude.
Star Wars 53 is called Last Gift from Alderaan, and we got Leia on a trip to the edge of space, and she's thinking about that time that Alderaan got blown up.
Think about that time that Darth Vader swindled her out of her jewels.
She's like she's lost in space. She's like lost. She's just lost in her dreams about it, and. Like, somebody comes and tells her she's getting close to landing on Shiva 4. So she's like, oh my God, okay. And she goes down to the planet, but boom, there's an explosion. She goes backwards, and it turns out, they're in a minefield. So she has to decide if she's going to, like, jump away and, like, get away from the place and leave the ship in danger or whatever she's going to do. But she shoots off and just goes straight down to the surface in, like, this little area that she's in. And she kind of just, like, crashes on the surface. And the people that live on Shiva 4 hear it, and they come over to where she crashed, and they like have their like weapons ready. So it turns out they're like scavengers, and Leia's attacked, and they're like native, like warriors of the planet show up and like chase the scavengers away.
Is this what John Carter from Mars is like?
Yes,
honestly, yeah,
yes,
a little bit.
This is a multi-part one, right? Like, it's like
yeah.
a couple of issues on this planet. This is the one with, like, the...
This is with Scar.
Key man looking dude.
Yeah, this is with Scar, yeah.
Who just looks like an evil Beta Ray Bill.
literally, yeah.
yeah.
This was so wacky, and so... I was like... The writing of it becomes, like, poetic, almost like the leader's, like...
Shakespearean
like,
or something.
Diary entries or, like, his inner monologue, but it's like... I was just like, it was so different that I'm like, is this like an homage? And I just don't have the
like
the
a right specific frame. Homage. I have no idea. Yeah.
Okay. I just thought like the way that they looked is like what I think I think of John Carter.
It definitely is like in that realm.
Actually, like read any of those or like seen the movie or anything.
Yeah, none of the things look like it, but the idea, the fact that you were so quickly to jump on John Carter, I'm like, yeah, no, that
does make sense.
And yeah. That's the same vibe as it. Yeah.
So they fight these scavengers away, the Sheevan warriors, and Leia realizes that like she's so far out in space that the language that these people are speaking is not like able to be translated. So they just kind of, she's like, I'm Leia, and like tries to like show that she doesn't want to hurt him or anything.
Which is our like at least second reference to the fact that everybody just has translators and that's how they're able to just communicate.
Yeah. But they take her gun. And they take her on a search party to like a destroyed like ruin of a city, and she is able to like save them from going into the city, which is obviously like irradiated, and kind of like figures out a way to communicate that to them. And after a while, you know, after that first time of like showing them that she cares about them or whatever, she kind of starts to like assimilate, starts to like become one with the tribe a little bit, and like. The warlord and his wife like her, and she like explains to them like a little bit more about what's going on than they maybe understand, and about what happened with the bomb that blew up their city. And they go to a gala, and she like dances and impresses everybody, and then she runs off with tears in her eyes because like emotion, she like is overcome with emotion.
It reminds her of home.
Yeah, and Aaron, the warlord He-Man guy, shows up. And like follows her out there, and she's like, my whole life I've been like a child soldier, like freedom fighter, rebellion person, and ever since my planet's been destroyed, like I'm trying to like be Alderaan myself somehow and like be true to my people and all that stuff. And now that she's like not fighting and not keeping up her end of the bargain and just being like in court and doing all these old things that she used to do, she feels like she's like wasting that promise that she made. So she's like kind of feeling emotional about it. And she wishes that somebody else lived maybe besides her. And he's like, I lost my daughter. And then they get attacked by the Imperials and they get captured.
So why don't you be my daughter, girlfriend?
It's like pretty much that quick.
It does have that vibe. Yeah.
On aboard the Imperial ship, you find out that everything that has been going on down there on the planet is actually like the Empire, like doing some like Banana Republic type shit, like the CIA used to do in the 60s, messing with governments and getting them to like kill each other and shit. Like,
yeah.
Don't do that.
It's weird because it's like, this is like a primitive culture Star Wars relative, but it's still in certain ways and more advanced than what we have now. Yeah. And so it's weird. It's like barbarians with like tech.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's a guy called Scar who's like one of the big guys, but working with the Empire on the planet. So then we're in issue 54, Starfire Rising. Scar has a ship, and Leia and Aaron are on board, and they're being tortured. And you find out that Aaron's right-hand dude, Delois?
I don't know how to say this. I felt like it was Delois?
Delois?
Delois, I like.
Dom Delois?
That's what I was thinking.
Pizza the Hut! Aaron's right-hand man, Delois. You find out that the plan that Scar has is to cause like a revolution because he wants to blow up the entire like royal society, like the royal society, with like a big bomb, and then like just be like, now that your leadership's gone, we're gonna just take the people, make our own new like government, and like join the Empire.
Why would they do that to begin with?
Right.
Like, well, the Empire could just go in.
The bit for this planet was like, it just was in like a perpetual like warring faction state, and Aaron was like the first person to like peaceably broker a treaty where everyone like lives together.
Yep.
But I guess also they have like a war frenzy, or like isn't that like part of their thing? They like they get like amped up and they're just much stronger, and that's why the Empire wants them as like soldiers.
Yes, they're like stock. They're like good stock.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know, Saiyans, how like weren't they like captured originally by fucking what's his face to like Frieza to like use him as something? I don't know, just kind of like that idea.
I'm gonna read just like I did last episode, I'm gonna read one more quote from Charlie, our book report
okay
writer.
Okay.
Here's just his bullet point for this next part of the
story. Can't wait to hear this.
Leia and Aaron are able to escape captivity of Scar, and Leia looks a man in the eyes as she stabs a knife in his chest and his inner light fades. Fun Star Wars adventures.
Yep.
This was weird because like the whole thing was more dramatically written. Good note. And she's killed tons of people before, but like this one apparently because it was so close.
Even close.
I'm pretty sure she's like melee killed people before.
Can't see the eyes behind those masks.
It haunted her.
She definitely chokes Jabba the Hutt to death with a chain eventually.
That's after this.
That's true, but she had it in her.
She's a killer now.
Yeah, this is what
unlocks the Jabba kill?
Yeah.
The killer in Leia is the killer in you. Killer
in you. So they go to Scar's shuttle. The bomb is ready to go. They fight their way to the bomb, but are surrounded. And then Luke, Lando, and Chewie appear, and they rescue them. And Leia has enough time to disarm the bomb and saves everybody. And Chewie wraps everything up because Scar is about to escape, but Chewie's able to throw a fucking turret at the ship and blow it up in midair.
Yep.
And that's crazy, but it's true.
All right.
How tall is he?
That's our Chewie.
How tall is he? How powerful? How big are his arms?
It was a ridiculous way to
What are you talking about?
He rolled a 20, dude.
Look, I'm here for it. I want it to have happened.
He's like, argh.
And now that I'm like,
it's sick when Chewie throws things at other things, but it's just like, not that.
It's just a ridiculous thing to throw.
Now that I'm in the mindset that like this is the proto canon, and then then Galactus is going to come and wipe it out and become the Xenoverse. Like, I just want Chewie to have his big muscles. Yeah, I just want him to have his big muscles.
Not end good for Chewie. So
it doesn't end for him either way. It doesn't end well for him either way.
If Chewie's throwing turrets, at least he's not making machines.
At least he's not,
you know,
getting crushed to death by a giant moon.
Chewie.
All right. Spoilers, I guess.
Yeah,
after the fact?
No, we've already
mentioned it. For episode 800.
Yeah, you're right. That's fair. Yeah, fuck you guys.
it'll be the golden or the crimson
if you're
anniversary of this show.
Yeah.
Episode 50 is not the NJO yet, probably. We have. Wait till the youth.
The whole thing. I don't know how you guys got it. I kind of like come and go with these when they like wildly. I just have to be like, I guess we're fucking here right now. This is so out of left field. But then we're about to go British Town, and then it was like, I guess Star Wars really can be fucking whatever the fuck you want it to be. But Aaron, I think there was an implied time jump. Like she'd been there for weeks and like got.
Yeah, it was like really, Hakuna Matata vibes. Yeah.
In there. And he just was like, there's a whole bit about him like falling in love with her. With Leia and like his wife, like knowing, but then like Luke coming and like him seeing the connection and being like, no, this is whatever. And then his wife being like, I always knew you'd come back to me. It was just like, the fuck are you? What are you fucking talking about? Like a hot girl comes down for 1 minute and you like, oh, I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ, Aaron, get your shit together.
Dude, yeah, right?
Wear his shirt.
Do you think he's like, like on Earth, if a hot alien came down and a dude was like, I'm going to leave my wife for that alien. Oh, no, that alien's leaving. You know what? I just have a thing for aliens. Do you think I was like that for him? He's like, she just looks so weird, dude. Like, I got to hit it.
It's like, she doesn't look that different from his wife. She's not like exotic in any particular
way.
But
an alien, nonetheless.
Maybe she smells wild, though.
That's true.
Maybe like she just.
Ooh, do you think she has an accent?
Oh, yeah.
Some dudes love accents.
Yeah.
I like a good accent.
She had to learn their language through translators, so there's probably like some like,
yeah, he's like,
your Alderaan accent is so hot, and it's like, yeah,
maybe
like,
Alderaan,
you can't do that.
Maybe like, Alderaan is like thick, old school, like New York Italian.
Leia's just like, gabagool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get it. You give me like a sweet honey with like an Australian accent, and I'm like,
Australian?
Dude, when Tom
Australian
was a thing,
Davis?
I had Karen, the Australian voice, and it was like, I'm not going to do an accent.
Australian.
You should tell me to make a right turn, and I was like,
no.
Yes. Early Lady D energy.
Early Lady D energy.
No, just like being.
He had a glimmer of like true nostalgia on his face just now, thinking back.
For like driving back 3 year nostalgia.
Thinking back to the imaginary
18-year-old boy with
Tom Karen voice. Don't call it the Karen voice.
Longest
I haven't seen her, but I assume it's a similar.
It's basically the same exact thing that happened to you. Yeah. So they're having the gala, and then they're like, uh-oh, the Empire's here, we gotta go. So
still more, I forgot.
There's like a black hole as they leave, and the Millennium Falcon flies away, and Luke like uses the Force to get around the invisible black hole,
dude.
But the Star Destroyer just like goes into a black hole and disappears and dies.
The art on this shit was sick.
It's sick.
It was like Interstellar. I'm just bummed that it was only like a little mini panel. I'm like,
and then Luke and Leia are like rebellion for life.
Yeah, I mean,
we ride together, we die together.
What are we?
Oh, family. And then because like, what is it? Doesn't Luke like takes over to fly? And I just love it that Han's like, hey, be gentle with the material. Do you have any idea how much this costs?
It's like, no, that's like Han's jacket.
But this is like his outfit. Oh. It was a great Lando moment where I was like, there he is. He's been like kind of like, what's the fucking snake in from the later games?
The snake?
Solid Snake. Naked
oh,
snake.
Naked Snake. Punished Snake.
Punished Snake. He's been like little like, I gotta like make good. I really like fucked up. So that what's was a Lando. That was game? A very Lando ass like, yes. Whoa, watch the jacket while they're about to die.
Yeah.
Just priorities.
Yeah, that is Lando. The snake from the games.
You know, sorry. My brain makes connections. I knew you get there, by the way. You got me there.
You figured it out immediately.
Is that not from the games?
No, you're right. I didn't say
snake from nature.
You're right. The games.
From the games.
Yeah, no, you're right. The Olympic Games. Paris
2024. I can't believe how are
Sonic
compete?
And Mario doing that?
They're friends, at least. At the very least. Star Wars number 55 is called Pliff.
Hey, I know this isn't canon to old canon.
Yeah.
But in the last couple of years, a book after The Last Jedi came out that's for children called Chewie and the Porgs. That's literally...
This?
That's Pliff. Pliff is Chewie and the Porgs.
Pliff literally is like... even in the movie, The Last Jedi, it's Chewie and the Porgs.
That's what this is.
Yeah. So we're on a forest planet, which is called Arbra, kind of on the nose. But this is going to maybe be the Rebel base. So... out goes Leia, Chewbacca, and C-3PO, and everybody's like, hell yes, except there's these creatures. I don't want to say their name because it sounds bad. Like, it just sounds like I'm saying a slur. They're called Hoojibs, and Chewbacca doesn't like them. And back at the fleet.
Much like Chewie and the Porgs the book.
Yes, exactly.
I bet by the end he will.
He'll like them for lunch. So.
Not in the book.
No, yeah.
In the book, they're best friends.
Okay, that's fine. Luke's back at the fleet. They get the order to move the fleet away and scatter because the Empire can't attack them all at once that way, which is like how fish work, which is cool. He's like, I guess I'll do that. And he does it. And then in the docking bay, Lando's ready to take the Falcon down to Cloud City because he figures that ever since he left, he just kind of like left it in Imperial hands. So Luke's like, later, dude. And like Lando takes off and Luke and R2 are alone and back on Arbra. The rebels are drained of all power, which is done by the Hoojibs, and they capture one of them, and it like is one of the few races in the galaxy that can speak telepathically. This Hoojib says his name is Pliff. It says that people eat energy that comes from these crystals that are in a cave, but they can't get in the energy crystal cave right now because the Sivalith is in there. Pliff says the Sivalith came to be on their planet, like, because it just crashed there from space, like the Cloverfield monster.
This is a cosmic horror. It's just like a space thing that landed and is like a grotesque mutating.
Yeah, and it just like took over their cave and shits all over it and won't let them get their Hoojib crystals. And Leia decides that to send out the signal to get the rebels to come pick them up, they have to help them so that they can get their power back to their equipment. So they get to the Hoojib cave. And they distract the Sivalith and kill it, and it's a great day for the Hoojibs.
It's kind of a sick fight. This issue didn't do much for me, but this like battle with the giant creature was like kind of cool. Doesn't it get like rammed onto like a crystal and like
yeah, it gets like impaled. I see if I can find the oh yeah, perfect. I found it exactly. Yeah, I opened like, right to it.
Chewie does some like I don't know. It's
the
cool.
Crystals are really cool because they're like big rainbow sparkly crystals that look.
This
neat.
Feels so. Early, like late 70s, early 80s, like fantasy movie.
Mm-hmm. Feels like cosmic like, Marvel.
Like, I haven't seen Dark Crystal or Willow, but like that just feels like it would be that.
It's in that vibe for sure.
I'm learning so much. No Dark Crystal either.
What's the one with Tom Cruise?
I have seen Labyrinth and I've seen Legend.
Legend, yeah. That's the one
with Tim Curry.
Tom Cruise and Tim Curry?
Tim Curry's like the devil.
Oh, yeah, the like big red devil.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. Oh, man, what a weird era that was for movies. Okay.
Or great.
No, maybe. You're right.
I feel like cocaine was involved.
Very, very possibly.
I'm starting to think maybe. The 80s?
There's like a mist of cocaine like going around in the air in most of that movie, actually.
Also, late 70s? Quaaludes?
I don't know. I don't know when that movie came
out. Which I just learned about last weekend.
Quaaludes?
Yeah.
Did you watch
I was at a party.
The Wolf of Wall Street?
Schroeder's having a baby, I guess I can say that. So yeah, like a party, and then somebody that was there that's like related to his wife was just telling us stories about his long and exciting life. And was like,
really
he was like around when Quaaludes were like a big thing and was like partying with Hollywood people and stars. And I learned who used to have a trunk full of cocaine, Jack Nicholson.
I mean, of all the people,
but like, not surprised at all.
That doesn't shock me.
But I didn't really, I'd heard the word, but I didn't know anything about it. So then I just like read up on them and it just sounds like, it was just like a very yay, love and kind of like whatever thing. So like that kind of like weird, warm fantasy, like light stuff kind of feels like it's all kind of like based off that.
Yeah. So the Syphilith is dead. The Hoojibs are like, hey, like you saved us. Thank you so much. And they're like, well, we can't build our base here because the Hoojibs are here. And they're like, well, maybe we can collaborate. Like maybe we can just hang out together. And it's like, yay, okay. So that's actually what happens. They're gonna like build.
Dude, this is the weirdest one to be a cliff, like to be the end of this, because you're like, what if Pliff
is
like,
are you saying that
Hoojibs, who just make no fucking sense for Star Wars, like the idea, like, yes, this will be our new base.
We're gonna do this, and we're like, 20 issues.
What do you mean? Yeah.
Pliff is in the crew now. I don't know if he is or not. I hope he is.
He's a new bollocks.
Yeah. And then back on Bespin, the tag is that Lando gets to Cloud City and it's totally deserted. And that's like the cliffhanger for like Marvel Star Wars 55.
It was
in this trade.
It was a hell of a cliffhanger because it's like, all right. Also, no one went Lando. Like, you didn't get like one guy to like check in.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Nope. Sorry. They're all in the UK right now fighting cults.
Yeah. So we're now in.
Dude.
This is a good segue because we are now in the Empire Strikes Back monthly magazine, which is a UK magazine that had its own Star Wars comics. This is issue 149 of this magazine, but I think it used to be weekly.
Interesting.
I think it used to be weekly.
So it's like 149 would have been week 149?
I don't know exactly, but it's something like that. It's something like that. But every issue had like a lot of different Star Wars stuff. It was like a Star Wars fan magazine, just like the other ones that we've been talking about. And this issue is called Death Mask. Luke is in a deadly chase with a Imperial TIE fighter away from the Rebel fleet. He evades them. But when they find out that Luke is the pilot, the Star Destroyer sends out... This is... Okay. So there's a guy named Alton Wuho, and he has...
I just want to point out for the record.
Yeah.
For anyone who wants to know what this character looks like, literally the dude... From No Country for Old Men, Anton Chigurh.
Yes.
Looks just like him.
That haircut.
Identical character.
Yeah, that weird haircut.
I could not think of anything else the entire time.
He really does look exactly like him.
Exactly like him.
And he has this little skull monkey thing with jewel eyes that's like a monkey with skull skin face called Reist.
Oh, this one is not Alan Moore because the next
issue is not Alan Moore. Yeah, but this is equally weird.
This was so weird.
He has this little like, it's like he has him in like a falconry type of situation. He's like a little monkey man called Reist.
And they literally call him a nightmare demon.
Yeah.
Like just straight up, this is the first time I've ever heard demon in Star Wars.
The British comics just... seem to unabashedly throw fantasy into this.
Hands
like
off.
They wear like friar, like throughout all of these, there's like so much direct high fantasy.
Yeah.
That it's like very dissonant to me.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. It's instead of being like through the power of the Force, it's like, no, this demon monkey with a skull face invades your dreams.
This was
like,
that
that's
era
the
though.
Plot. It's wild.
This was the era of the like British invasion in mainstream comics, like all these new people, like Alan Moore, like Grant Morrison, you know, all these like older, like sort of like more mature tone, intellectual, culturally literate, sort of interesting stories were coming out of England, and you know that's when Neil Gaiman started writing Sandman is around this era. Alan Moore was on Swamp Thing and a bunch of other comics. And they were doing something different with the format. Like Watchmen was about to come out at this era too. They were starting to write these comics that were mainstream but were like adult. Dark Knight Returns came out around this time too. X-Men was starting to move in a very mature direction at this time. And so these weird comics that are in this Empire Strikes Back UK batch here, which we don't even get anything like this in the next collection, really interesting because it really is Star Wars themed British invasion, like almost like Vertigo style comics.
It just feels totally different from anything we've seen
it's
so far.
Absolutely Papa George hands off totally.
Yeah.
Like these things. I don't know. Like it's crazy that Alan Moore wrote these.
It's so weird. The only context they gave was just that like for this period of time, they usually just reprinted the American comics, but then for like these couple issues, they got all new ones, and then they just went back to like only being a reprint thing. So it's like, what? Why did you get this? And was like, did it stop because somebody read these and they were like,
what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, maybe
it very well could be.
But I guess then they collected this. Like Star Wars Devil Worlds is like a whole is like a collection of a bunch of these like British things.
Yeah. Devil Worlds is a perfect name for this because these are all like insane purgatory mystic, spooky things. Yeah. So Reist is this little monkey that's like got a skull face and jewel eyes, and he's like a little demon nightmare fucker. And he goes in a torpedo tube and it launches at his fighter and it hits him and he crashes on a planet with skulls and skeletons and his X-Wing is destroyed. And on the Star Destroyer they track his crash. And he begins to find Luke's body. He like starts a search for Luke's body. And on the planet, Luke sees his own grave and he sees all his friends dying and he sees a battle with Vader and he's being chased by stormtroopers. But then he reaches out to the Force and realizes that he's actually in the thrall of this little monkey
Reist.
He's
still sitting in his seat,
yeah,
man.
He's still sitting in his thing, and this thing's sitting on his chest, like controlling his mind. And he shakes his way out of the monkey. And you see Reist, who is a Droxinian nightmare demon. And he spears the creature with his saber, and the Imperial shuttle shows up, and Wuho comes out, and he's looking for Reist, and he finds him dead, and Luke Skywalker standing between them, and they exchange blows, and they find out that Alton is a droid.
And Reist, I think, says, like, I need to get revenge on my master, because he was bad.
Yeah.
By the way, he's not a man, he's a droid.
Which is why he couldn't be mind controlled.
Right.
And so, because this dude is a droid, he takes a part from the droid's body,
puts it in
uses
the X-Wing.
It to fix his X-Wing.
It's
space.
It's so weird the way they tie it up. But this is where, like, because Alton or whatever had a blaster, and he only had this lightsaber, where Luke's like, oh, man, there's no way he's going to let me get in close. Like, there's no way I can do anything with this, where I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess you don't realize that. You just reflect it back at him. But, okay, so that this issue was black and white. The other bit they were talking about was like, the rest of these issues were colored and then collected in a two-issue series for the U.S. called Star Wars Everworld. So, like, they only reprinted American versions, then the British made this, and then later these got recollected and colorized for the first time for America. Which is
do you know when that
like,
was based on when they came out originally?
Much later.
Do you think this was after the team that made them found like success in America? They were like
1996.
I think it absolutely is like,
yeah.
Oh, hey, Alan Moore wrote these.
Interesting, yeah.
Were colored. It actually, yeah, is it specifically the Alan Moore issues? But whatever.
So after Star Wars picked up again, they were like, hey, you know these names. They made something
They
cool.
started to republish everything at Dark Horse. So
sure.
Like, when they realized that there was like a small collection of comics that Alan Moore wrote for Star Wars, of course they made a collection.
I mean, literally we're looking at, I'm on Marvel Unlimited reading these.
Yeah.
So like they keep getting republished. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
Devil Worlds really is like the perfect, it's just
exactly what they are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this one's called The Pandora Effect. This is by Alan Moore. Han and Leia are bickering with Chewbacca behind them, and they're on this rim world and they're trying to smuggle some salts that people used to use medicine so that they can make some money to keep things going. And on their way off the planet, they're followed by a member of the Tor Gang crime syndicate named Vor Childermas.
Mm-hmm.
And
of the upper North Hampshireshire child of Mosses.
Yeah. So, yeah. From Big Egg, West Egg.
Right, right.
The ships.
Can I believe that you just said that perfectly without flubbing it at all?
I thought
there's
I did.
So many fucking syllables.
The ships like cat and mouse each other and then lose each other in this thing called the Hell Hoop. And then inside the Hell Hoop, they get like, there's like a triangle inside the Hell Hoop that they fall into and go into pitch darkness. And
that kind of has like Destiny vibes or some shit that like.
Yeah, it's really like crazy. And they find themselves in a like structure and there's five people who call themselves Five.
The Five, yeah. Bro.
They're enlightened souls who have existed in a pocket dimension for centuries who prescribe to the concept of pure evil. Which is just a bold swing.
Let's yeah,
just,
I mean, like, it is.
It's insane. It's absolute nonsense.
So they, like, psychedelically melt Childer Moss and his dudes. And then they strap Chewie down in, like, a bunch of beasts that are going to fight him. And then there's something called Wootzek that's trapped in an angular prismatic prison. That's like a crystal
this
entity.
Is like a cosmic.
This reminds me of Sutek from Doctor
yes,
Who.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, this reminds me of Sutek from Doctor Who from back in the Tom Baker days. And he's also like.
What era is that? Because it's called Wootek?
Yeah.
Instead of Sutek. Like, is it just a reference?
It could be. Like, Sutek is very much like kind of like a mummy based thing. So maybe it's not.
Oh, exactly. It's not like a cosmic being in a crystal?
It is a cosmic being that's in a mummy.
All right.
Don't worry about it. You know, if you watch it in context, it makes more sense. But it's, you know.
I'm sure it does. I'm just saying, like, it's almost the same name.
He's suddenly relevant
and it's
again.
From British.
He's suddenly relevant again in the Doctor Who mythos, but I'm not going to tell you why.
I absolutely love that every conversation about Doctor Who is, well, in context, it makes sense.
It does.
Here's the thing. I watched the show for a number of years. I don't know that it does.
It does. It does. It does. It does. It's just, it's been on TV for 60 fucking years. So they are threatening Han and Leia with torture. Han gets taken down. They start to torture Leia with like psychic mind torture stuff. Then they're going to move on to her body. Back in the menagerie, Chewie like releases Wootzek and all the other beasts get out and cause a distraction. And Wootzek is powerful enough that he starts killing members of the Five and their little paradise kingdom of evil starts to crumble. And Han wakes up to see Leia aboard the Falcon. They're just in there. And then actually he's not on the Falcon. And actually they break Han Solo's mind with psychic torture. And then Chewbacca sneaks up on the torturer and bonks him really hard on the head. And then
it's so weird because he doesn't just like kill the guy.
No.
Then they're like, oh, okay, now you're back in trouble.
Yeah, so they start torching him again, and then Solo fights, and then one of the Five appears, and they're like, oh, shit, Wootzek's free, and then, like, a beam comes in, and they, like, burst into, like, dust or whatever, and Wootzek just kills them all because they were his captors, and he lets them go for letting him out of the crystal, and it just apparates the Falcon back into space. And Wootzek just flies off to be an eldritch horror somewhere in space. And Han's just like, thank God we're in the Empire. And that's the first story that Alan Moore ever wrote for Star Wars.
I don't think he like slept on the assignment.
It's beautifully written.
It wasn't like dull. It was just intense.
Yes.
And I was like,
it was beautifully written. It was super scary. It had almost nothing to do with anything that had ever been in Star Wars before.
Like you were saying, it's a swing. Like you were like, all right, I'm going to do a thing. It's an insane thing, but it is a considered, it like exists.
And you're
like, okay.
It could be like an attempt to like walk towards explaining the Force in some way or something. I don't know what.
I just don't understand the concept of like our evil paradise. Like, yeah. What do you mean by that? What does that mean?
It's an extremely like psychedelic,
yeah.
sort of metaphysical idea.
From that era. Even with stuff like the New Gods, where it's like you just take like broad concepts, good, evil, like human nature, and like taking one aspect of it and just making it so they're like, we've been around forever and we're just in this ancient evil that just tortures forever. But it's also weird because they have the vibe of like Swingers, where like when the two people are off, They're like, they've already started torturing. Like, eh, it'll take them a week. Like, we got time.
We got to get the snacks together.
You're like, you're around for an eternity, but you're like, oh, they've already started doing it. It was just like, it's such
but
a
I
weird.
I love torturing. I got to be there for the beginning.
They're both like eternal and powerful and so human and like easy to defeat also that it's sure. so weird.
But then.
Well, we don't, this time, this one's not by Alan Moore. This one is 153, Dark Knight's Devilry. Luke and Leia are captured, and we got this character, Ryko Vant, who is bringing in the rebels when they are ambushed by guerrilla fighters, and Vance is wiped. Vance, like, whole platoon or whatever is wiped out. The Imperial commander barely escapes by jetpack, but he gets a homing beacon attached to R2-D2, and they take the guerrilla fighters take Luke and Leia prisoner and lead them back to Mika Ren, who is their leader at the hideout, and tells them that they didn't get Vant. And she's told that Vant escaped and that he probably got back to the base. And at the base, Vant did make it back, but he's being threatened by Vader. And he knows that Vant had Luke and Leia and let them slip through his fingers. And he says, nonetheless, the tracker that you put on them is useless because I already know where they are. And back at the base with the gorillas, Luke says he and Leia are trying to go to an Imperial base because he found an alien ship that had tapes inside it that said that there was a crystal in a vault by that base that could turn time back and change the past to make peace in the galaxy.
I want to stress
Star Peace.
That I right. I absolutely forgot this was an issue.
Yeah.
Like, I was ready to be like, Vader chess.
Yeah.
No, like, I forgot this was one of them. That's how little this impacted me. I was like, oh, yeah.
It's quick. These ones are quick.
This happened.
These are not like 22 pages. Nine issues. Pages yeah. or whatever.
Yeah, they're quick. So
which is maybe why it's even crazier, like, the Alan Moore ones, where you're like, you fit so many concepts. Like, it feels like so much more happened, but in such a short amount of time.
And it's beautifully yeah. written. It's beautifully written and plotted out. Like, he really understands how to use the comic meaning. This is actually somebody called Steve Moore who wrote this one. This is a different Moore. But yeah, Alan Moore.
No relation?
I don't believe so. Pretty common last name. But so the guerrilla fighters are like, sure, we'll help you find that time crystal that can change the reality. But then in private, they're like, yo, real talk though. We're going to like kill them and take that crystal, right? Yep. Got it. And so they get to the outpost and there's a big battle and they beat the Imperials that are at the outpost and they're about to blow the vault open. And the explosion from the vault like creates a crater and all the guerrilla fighters die, but Luke and Leia live. And it turns out that the crystal didn't exist and it was just a bomb. And Vader just made up the story to capture Leia because he thought that she would want to resurrect Alderaan.
Dude, this had some big Dune energy in that the rebel soldiers like look like the, what are the
like desert?
The Iraqan soldiers yeah. or whatever, like. And then the idea of, like, planting a fake lore.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I don't know. I was, like, shades of that. But it's, also, like...
But not God, as Vader, not like, as intellectual as that at all.
Oh, for sure, no. But yeah. also, like, this is one of those Vader things where you're, like, I just... It's a lot of work for Vader. I don't... He's more direct, it feels like.
This definitely was the time period where they're trying to figure out, like, what made Vader evil? And I'm glad we all settled on the point that, like, no, he just swings a laser sword and looks awesome and force chokes people. The Emperor's the guy who's like, I put a bomb on the planet. I'm glad we settled on that.
Vader's just like a hate pit bull.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. I love that about him.
Vader is not dumb. Like, his plans in the movies make sense of, like, let him escape, but, like, let's try to make it look like we're trying to get them to, like, find the... They did... Their problem wasn't that they didn't find the rebel base.
Right,
they exactly. did find it. Or, like... You know, get him on Bespin. It's just as like.
Yeah, the difference is the Emperor's like, I'm the one who planned all this, and I've been. Their friends are on the moon, and I have the ships over there. And it's convoluted and insane. While Vader's like, yeah, I just let you guys escape, just so we could follow you. Like that's it. Like keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah, exactly. Super weird. Story. Luke ends up throwing a proton grenade at Vant and Vader. Vant dies, which is, he just, like, Luke was like, fuck you! And then they get away in a TIE fighter, but Vader just kind of like,
I'll get you next time.
Yeah, he's like, I didn't die because I'm Vader, but I'm dead as far as the story is concerned.
He's like, cool. He has a cooldown.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, ah.
The spawn timer.
And then we're back to Alan Moore with Tlatni Throws a Shape in number 154. On a deserted planet in the far reaches of space, Leia runs from stormtroopers.
Dude.
This is crazy.
This one.
It's very sick.
I don't know that I think it's sick.
It's sick.
I think that maybe where my head was at was like, I should have like read one of these and then like taken a day or something. Like just back to back trying to like track, because not even these are consistent. This one was like.
None at all.
I think that you're trying to do something artsy and cool here, but I actually was like annoyed by it.
You were like, this isn't my Star Wars.
I mean, I'm with them on that.
I get the idea, like, just, I don't know. I don't know that it like, what was the point of this?
It's about there are forces in the universe that are so much more powerful than these stupid little wars that we're all fighting. And they can do things that we can't even imagine.
Yeah, except for like, they're just as petty.
It's like a story that's like written by a Jedi.
But again, but this is the same vibe as the
it sounds like they it sounds like a kid's tale.
But this is the same vibe as the last one, the one before, where it's just like, like you were saying, there's forces like time stone or evil five evil. Like it's just stuff that seems like, yeah, okay, there's things bigger than Star Wars, but like also not. I mean, the bad guy mind controls people and has a laser sword. The good guy, one of them turned into a ghost. Like,
right,
that's fine. We don't need any more than that. But they're like, no, no, no. We got some crazy stuff.
Yeah, here's
fractal, non-sentient super creatures.
Yeah, it's like
speaking in weird languages, like throwing shapes and like making physical stuff.
I think he felt like the Force was just the beginning. I think he felt like the mysteries of existence and reality are like a big part of Star Wars.
It's very clear that rubbed off on people because in more modern Star Wars, it's like the Force is that.
Sometimes, which is like, yeah, exactly.
Fine, it's fine, but it seems weird.
It reminds given the me context of it reminds this me the of time the dagger of whatever.
The,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
from the Clone Wars. Do you remember that? Where they like go to that planet and there's like father and mother and brother.
Yeah.
Which isn't like kind of vibe.
Kind of, but that still like aligns with the idea of like the Force and like the dark and light side, and then it's like gone later. But
this,
like, this is like different elemental creatures appearing and then like being weird and then like leaving. It reminds me of like, it feels very British. Like Grant Morrison,
that's
like,
exactly
writes stuff
what
like
it is.
This. And it's fine, but in a single issue, I don't know that there's enough time to make this.
This is just a story in a magazine.
So
sure. It's not like an issue of story. It's just like a brief, it's like a short. Think about this.
But the difference, I think, between this, which is, they never come up again.
Well, here, let me just get
sure,
through.
Sure.
So basically, she trips over an ancient stormtrooper helmet that's on this weird planet while she's running from stormtroopers, and she like keeps running, and like kind of like ends up psychedelically amongst these like sort of god beings that have the powers of like creation. And Tlatni's one of them, and she can throw shapes, which is just to, like, pretty much whole cloth create things. And she changes the molecular structure of one of the stormtroopers. She kills Leia. She turns her heart to stone. She combines all the stormtroopers together into, like, a body horror thing.
Dude, that was grisly.
Yeah, it actually looked really fucked up. And then after they did all that, they were like, well, we're bored. And they just reset everything back. And Leia was alive again, everything was fine, but they just, for some reason, sent the stormtroopers back 8,000 years further back, and Leia was just like, that was weird, and just keeps on going.
Yeah, this is also one of those things where I'm like, less than a story, you're just like watching a thing play out, and like, Leia has no agency, there's not really...
Yeah, it's like a little riff or something. It's
like
really,
she like died for a second, she's even like, I died, but I'm not dead now.
And this is the difference between this and say like, the father, brother, sister storyline, which is like, that's when they wake up in the ship at the end, it's like, was that real? Did that happen? Who knows? But, you know, all the characters learn something out more about themselves. And then little hints of maybe that was real are dropped for the next X number of seasons and shows.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So this is, we'll never see this again. We'll never, there are, who knows if they're deities? Who knows if they were important? And it's just like a weird vibe, especially considering that. Yeah, at the end, none of it really matters. They're like, all right, we're done. And it's like, okay.
And they're just things that, like, come in. They get excited about, like, making physical forms. They, like, insult each other. don't want to clean up their mess, like little babies, and then just like leave. It's just like, it's so weird where you're like,
yeah, that's kind of what it's about. It's like, even in the Star Wars universe, like the forces of reality are just random and volatile, and
you know.
And it's weird because I feel like that goes against, like, Yoda is like, hey, dude, the Force is everything. It's very the UK stuff is very Western religion, while a lot of Star Wars itself is very sort of like Eastern religion.
Yeah, and it's also just like more thematically Star Wars than it is like grounded in the universe of Star Wars. A lot of this stuff, like, each one of these stories could be canon or not, and they're just kind of like themed around the characters and like...
The first Alan Moore looks like it's like Monty Python and the Holy Grail with Star Wars characters like walking through the sets.
Yeah,
sure.
It's really crazy, but they're very much like... They don't feel like things that would have ever been attempted in a larger or like more serious Star Wars format. Like, it feels like the only reason they're getting away with doing these kind of wacky stories is because they're kind of like small scale things that are in like a,
but
like
also
a fan magazine.
Having read a lot of old Judge Dredd, which is British, like the like black and white like weekly ones, where you're like,
that's a much more mature audience.
Sure, but yeah. It's like, those are not interested in like telling a saga ongoing. It's just like little,
it's like a little
story,
riff, yeah.
And sometimes it's from Dredd's, like, it's just, and I guess this is kind of that, where it's like, it's just the characters sometimes being involved in different ways, and it's sometimes it's not even really about them, but it does make for weird reading.
It's like Greek myths about these characters or something.
Well, and that's exactly what it is, because it's instead of a thought process of the forces in everything, and everything has like a life force to it. This is, there's a bunch of evil space dudes and a bunch of like Greco-Roman space dudes, and they're kind of assholes, which is exactly what Greco-Roman gods were. They were kind of assholes, and you know, like, but they're the gods, so we deal with them.
Exactly.
And it's not, honestly, it's not nearly as cool as like everything has a life force, that rock, that tree. I think it's a better vibe for Star Wars. Because it, you know, there's something more mystical about that, that it's like, it's in everything, dude. And I'm like, all right, I'm here for that. But to change it up, we're like, actually, there's space gods. It's like, eh.
He's trying to make it less clear. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just.
He's not trying to commit to, like, specific gods or something. Or saying they're actually gods.
There's a ton that you can do with a cosmic force, and that it can, you can see the future and project things, like. It wouldn't be weird to have things like that planet. Like, there are interesting ways that you can do it. It's just some of these are like, they don't, like you say, they don't feel attached to that concept, so it just doesn't
gel. Yeah, they can be powerful force users who just mess with their minds. And that's as simple enough, and you can still sell the exact same story.
Right. But I don't think he's very interested in, like,
right,
reality of the setting or whatever. Like, I think he just kind of, like, imagines that his story exists floating in a vacuum rather than in an established world with rules. If that makes sense?
I mean, if this wasn't Star Wars, this would be fascinating stories.
Yeah, it's still
because
fascinating.
It's literally just Leia, you're like, wait a minute.
That, it's like, it's almost like, yeah, it's almost like,
honestly,
Star Wars is just
here.
Honestly,
if it was a Doctor Who episode, I would not feel like weird about it at all.
Yeah.
Look, it definitely doesn't match the tone of Star Wars in any way, but it is, in fact, Star Wars. Which is,
so we are told.
Which is interesting.
It's canon.
It is in this protoverse. So this is Star Wars 155, Empire Strikes Back Monthly, Dark Lord's Conscience. This one is on the planet Cheelit. This is a good one.
Chess.
Vader is playing like a chess style game, and it's on like a life size board in front of him.
This one's awesome.
And his opponent is like this like floating pink squid inside of an orb that's across the board from him. And he says that the reason he's at the planet right now is because the Guild of Vindicators wants Vader to kill this guy in real life. And this robed figure shows up to the two stormtroopers standing guard. And you find that this guy, Klaatt the Shamer, is there. And he has mind powers.
He's got like penance stare or like...
That's exactly
Spectre
what it is.
Vibe, yes, of just, yes, like...
He just makes them like see their mistakes and failures. And like, they're the people that they murdered.
An interesting thing is that, because he gets to, like, people that have done truly bad things, but even when there's, like, they make a mention of, like, even if their, like, errors have been trivial, it always ends the same way, which is like, wait, hold on. If they they like die even if they make small mistakes, like what does that mean? Like, what am I supposed to take from that? But
yeah, it's super crazy.
They're literally just like the setup for all of us is like, we're playing chess, and if you're on the chessboard, you burn alive. It's like,
yeah, all the pieces get burnt.
This doesn't seem like a very chill area where like people think about what they're doing. Like,
oh, sure. But I'm just saying, like, it's just, you don't even have to mention, like, it's just weird to throw that in there because otherwise, the whole point is like, this guy is like, your own guilt is going to kill you. The bad things that you've done will, but then being like, oh, you like took a penny but didn't leave a penny, you're also going to die. It's like, wow, that's intense. I don't know why that's even there.
I guess he's black and white instead of like, I'll allow it.
And then he just, the only other weird thing is he looks like a medieval like guy.
Yes.
So it doesn't look.
That's true.
But this also could exist in a world where there's like mind magic and like force stuff. Like it kind of makes you be like, there is light and dark. There's like shame and emotion and you can use the force to amplify those. Like,
yeah,
you give me a version of this. Like, this is not far from me being like, this makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this of all these stories is the most like weirdly grounded, even though it's about playing chess with a squid and an orb.
But also, it's just Vader actually being a badass. And it's so rare we get to see him not be like the goofy planner Vader.
Right.
Or it's just Vader who's like, I've already won, bitch. Yeah. It's great.
So Clad the Shamer.
He's chill from beginning to end.
Yeah.
He just is there to play some chess in all ways. So Clat the Shamer comes up to him, is like, I'm going to make you face your all the souls you've killed. And Vader's like, I don't give a shit. And he presses like a button on the chessboard and it burns this guy alive. And then he's like, by the way, Squid, I know you were the one who tried to kill me with this guy. Fuck you too. And he burns the squid alive. And that's the fucking story.
It's great.
Yeah. The whole time, like in the beginning, it looks like he's like losing the game. And the squid lady's like, oh, you're such a good opponent. Ah, but you were this or that. She's like, kept trying to like guess his game and think that he lost. And I think he's just like, I am more direct.
Yeah.
And just, it's wonderful. It's like, there's another one where it just like happens and you're just like watching it play out. And you're like,
solid
like,
Vader adventure. Again, every time we get a Vader story where he just is the, like, I'm the best one here. You all think you're going to get Vader, but you're not. I don't know. So even in the new canon stuff, all the books we read was just Vader being like, dummies, and then murder everyone. You're like, yeah, get him, Vader.
Yeah,
it works every time. It's great.
I like Vader more than most characters. I like what it's like how I like Magneto. I just like hearing him talk. I like how he's a dick. I like when he does things. He's very consistent and very like well rendered. Everybody always gets him.
Yeah, when Vader is good, it's so obvious. So when Vader is bad, it's more than disappointing. Where you're just like, really? That's the Vader plan you wrote for him? Like, that's not Vader.
Exactly.
I've probably already talked about this, so forgive me if I have, but the one fucking thing that's missing about Vader for me is like, what do you want beyond what you're searching for in any given story? Because the idea where you're like, join me and we'll rule the galaxies. I'm like, there's never been a version of Vader that wants that. Like, what would that even look like? And you kind of, they like, even in the weird way that the prequel does, it sort of touch on like, well, there people won't do the right thing, but they should be made to do the right thing. Like, there's sort of the right idea of like wanting an order and then just either imposing it or not, but like that part just always rings a little false to me because I'm like, well, I've read now like 1,000 different things with you and you don't have any, you're like very side quest or like objective oriented, but what's the overarching narrative?
I wonder if that's because Lucas was like, you cannot talk about what Vader wants. Like, because I was just, as you were saying, I was thinking like, yeah, it's weird that we didn't get any Emperor stories because he's like a brand new character and we haven't touched him, but I guarantee Lucas is like, do not touch the Emperor.
We don't really get to play with him till after he gets his grand entrance when he's a surprise guest.
Yeah,
on the Death Star.
And then suddenly,
in some of when they reference the Emperor in some of these, it seems like they don't even know if he's powerful or not.
Absolutely.
Right.
Like they don't know in, I think, the book or whatever, it talks about how scared Vader is of him. But some of the other comics, it just sounds like he's still just a politician.
I don't think anybody really knew till the end of Jedi when those electric bolts started coming out of his hands.
Yeah, because even, like, even in Jedi, he's like, I'm an old frail man.
I do believe it's quite operational.
God, what a...
Up next is that other...
Hey, McDermott coming in strong.
156, Russ Never Sleeps. This is the one that I thought was the droid planet, or whatever it was. Droid world.
The world of God.
This is... droids go to die on this planet. C-3PO and R2-D2 are sent there by Luke to warn the last remaining living droids on the planet. The Empire is coming to strip the planet for its metal. 3PO and R2-D2 meet the droids who keep watch over the Ronyards, which is a name that is given to the entity that has grown from the dead droids that have been dumped on the planet, like a hive mind Evangelion-esque entity called the Ronyards. And they try to warn the Ronyards about the Empire, and C-3PO and R2-D2 are told that the Ronyards will save them from any kind of danger, and then a Star Destroyer drops off a shuttle of stormtroopers in the Ronyards, and they come across Mr. Five Lines, who's the droid that was meeting with 3PO and R2, and they decide to use him for target practice, and they blow him up, and the god apparently isn't showing favor, not protecting them, but then actually, oops, the earth underneath the stormtroopers opens up and swallows them all whole. And you're supposed to wonder whether it was an act of a vengeful droid god or not.
Right. Okay. Yes, 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 yes.
But it was.
I loved this story. There's not another interpretation that's what happened.
Yeah.
I loved this story. I thought it was really cool. I could have read a whole book about it.
Yeah. I think the only thing that took me a second to like wrap my brain around was just my very I'm like, you're trying to tell me that there is one planet like... in the entire galaxy that all droids get dumped at. Like, the logistics of dumping your trash on this planet just doesn't make sense to me.
I'm sure
I get it that it's a setting for this story,
yeah.
But you're like, we've seen them just, like, dump shit. Like,
I'm sure it's so not every fuel droid. And
that's what they said it was. It's like, all the droids come here. Like, why would you even treat droids differently in trash? Like, that you would... ship them separately from your other waste.
Well, you say that now, but you don't know how we're going to dispose of all those electric car batteries.
The moon, obviously.
Oh. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck the moon.
The path of least resistance is what humans take. So open the land and
throw it into the sun.
Put a little rug over it.
So we move on from that one. I really like just the concept of the living droid world that's made of all the ghosts of all the dead droids. Empire Strikes Back 157, The Flight of the Falcon, another one that's not by Alan Moore. This one's by Steve Parkwood.
Oh, the last one wasn't The World of Garn. Oh.
No.
That's later. Garn is a later thing.
Steve Parkhouse is his name. Steve Parkhouse is his name. No, Garn is the next one.
Yeah, Garn I think is the last one we do.
Flight of the Falcon is about Tharkos. It's a very short one. The Empire is trying to find faster ships and... they're at the Millennium Astra Engineering Plant, which is where, theoretically, the Millennium Falcon is from.
Right.
And they produce Millennium Hawks, is the name of the ship that they produce. And the Empire orders the rights to the new Millennium prototype for the new ship that they're making called the Millennium Falcon. And they set up a test pilot for the next day. But then a bunch of thieves and smugglers are told about this. And so they come up with their own idea for the ship. And turns out that the smugglers who disguise themselves as Imperials steal the prototype are Han and Lando, and they alert the rebellion that the Millennium plant is working with the Empire, and the rebels bomb it, and so now there will never be another Millennium ship, and the Millennium Falcon prototype is the last prototype of the lost Millennium Astro Engineering.
I must stress, this entire comic has the vibe as... Obi-Wan's outfit becoming the full Jedi outfit, but in comic form for a ship.
Name-wise, horrible.
What I thought about when I read this was when you were like, when they were making up names for like Luke's parents, and you were like, oh, they're just making it up. This is like, this is, the person that wrote this has done zero research into any of the like background for this, because they've already talked about this ship. Like, the whole point of the freighter is that it's like a fucking astrovac. Like, it is so... Yeah. It's like a camera. You would just never think twice about it, except for they fucking jacked this up to the nines.
It's like a hot rod.
Insane stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like the A-team's like van where it's like... So that they like made this whole thing where it's like a special prototype, one of a kind. You're like... Nope, you did no research. You just like wrote a thing and you were like, oh, Millennium Falcon, the Millennium Eagle. You're like, oh my god.
It's cute though. Like, I like the idea of this story. I like the romantic element of it. I like the pulpiness of it. I like the notion of it.
Again, if this was anything else besides Star Wars, fine. It'd be a fine story. It's just because it's Star Wars, it's like, no, that's not what that is.
I like the idea of a ship being stolen off the lines as the last ship, and it's the last ship, and it's cool, and there's not another one like it. It's just not true of the Millennium Falcon.
Right.
Yeah, I guess maybe in another universe this would be interesting, but like the story wasn't like told in any way that particularly, like the Alan Moore stuff was like headier. This was a like...
just like a little lore nugget.
This was just like, hi, we're just going to tell an event. There wasn't like a metaphor here.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that interesting.
Yeah, it's like a lore nugget that's fake.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, I'm going to tell you guys the backstory, the real story of the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, but it's just not. But but still, like, it wasn't like poorly written.
It was Lando's ship before, and he wasn't even
He won it off Lando. We know this.
Yeah, it's in the story,
like,
yeah.
I'm like, you didn't know research into this.
Then for some reason, 158 is not collected in this edition. I think maybe it just didn't have a comic in it, I have to imagine.
Yeah.
Like maybe 158 of the magazine was like an extra long article. But for whatever reason, there's no comic in it. We skip 158. We're in 159 now, which is called Blind Fury, another one by Alan Moore. Did we already read 158? No, it's just not here. Yeah, so the last one is by Alan Moore. It's called Blind Fury. Luke is training in the Force. They really kind of play fast and loose with the size of the X-Wing in this comic book, because he's inside his X-Wing doing Force exercises.
Force exercises in the X-Wing, yeah.
Which, you know, sense, whatever, but that's fine. Maybe he just didn't understand what he was looking at. Maybe he didn't understand how big the X-Wings
were. I feel like unless he's never seen Star Wars and was just told, make a Star Wars comic.
Alan Moore, like...
I mean, it's possible,
yeah,
dude.
I can see it. But, yeah, he just totally misjudges the size of an X-Wing on the inside in this. But then he gets a signal from the planet Garn.
That's right. I actually really like this one.
Yeah, Garn is desolate. Luke gets his way, gets there, and he finds a structure. And inside, there's these weird nightmare creatures. And he gets into it, and he gets deeper and deeper into the tower. And he finds these, like, prisms with souls trapped inside them.
This was so...
And he finds ancient Jedi armor. This actually reminded me of an Aphra story that we read a long time ago.
Dude, the Jedi armor was sick because it was like samurai.
Yeah.
It was like...
Yeah.
Yeah. So they get to the center of the room and they find the remains of a high shaman of the terrible glare called Rur, which is like Dark Souls Jedi.
Oh, big time.
Yeah. And then he's sitting inside a glass pyramid. He seeks revenge on the Jedi for killing his people. However, Luke tells Rur that no Jedi exists, and that
he's like, oh,
he thinks it's been months, but it's been thousands of years, and he goes crazy and he destroys everything around him, and he can't really understand. And so the tower collapses and Luke runs away, and he's looking at it and he's like, fuck, revenge sucks.
Here's the thing. You're totally correct. Rur is in new canon. In Dr. Aphra, Rur is the leader of a Jedi splinter group.
And it's the
called
crystal.
The Ordu Aspectu.
Yeah.
And he's in a giant computer, and he calls himself the Eternal Rur, and he's in Aphra.
I can't believe it's really him.
Yeah.
So they really just came to the story and yoinked it.
They took him.
From the Alan Moore.
Yeah.
Interesting, man. No wonder that dude is so mad all the time. No wonder he's so mad at everyone he's ever worked with. It's because they just all are like, that was a good idea. Yoink.
Yeah, it doesn't. The thing is they took an idea that felt kind of like out there, but was a fun story, and they were like, "Hey, what if we just slightly adjust it?"
Yeah,
and instead of it being Luke who finds it, we take our evil Indiana Jones character, and she finds it. And it makes way more sense.
Abandoned ruin of a Jedi splinter group is like the coolest thing I can think of.
Yeah,
like the idea of like a shrine with like ancient dilapidated Jedi armor that's like from a type of Jedi Knight that we don't understand anymore as like familiar. Really fucking cool. Really fucking cool.
Also like, I don't know, with the way the old canon, like the prequel days, mm-hmm. like it makes sense there would be like how there were different samurai like factions, like there would be different interpretations of how to like use the Force to like keep peace, and I don't know, like it's sick every like little bit, and maybe because they don't go too hard into any of them you still have your imagination, but every time they like lightly tickle what the Jedi Knights were doing before, it seems sick.
All this does is this story and the other more stories, you realize that the stories being told And we've said this multiple times. It doesn't need to be Star Wars. And I think that's what makes them fun, but also terrible Star Wars stories. But like at the same time, this is a story that you could set it in any sci-fi anthology story or any fantasy anthology story and be like, you come across this strange temple and there's like an ancient dude and he's like, I'll get my revenge on everyone. And it's like, dude, they've been dead for thousands. He's like, no. And then he just explodes. And it's like, wow, that was crazy. The end of the episode. Like it feels like it could be that. And so it's fun and I like it. It's just so not Star Wars at all.
Yeah, it's tight. It's neat. It's beautiful. It's just, I mean, that's the whole point, right? We're in this no baseline. Like the thing that makes me feel weird about this being Star Wars is my knowledge of the Zon Zone. Like I know the Zon Zone exists. I know the flavor of Star Wars that I'm waiting for. None of this Star Wars comic shit fits in it. Like the like, rabbit with the ears.
Even these kind of know they don't fit because like most of these end with like, that was weird. I'm not going to talk about that ever again.
Right, exactly.
But it's happened like 9 times now. And so you're like, how many times are you going to go to like,
there's
the outside the galaxy or some other place where you're like, oh, I thought we said we were never going to talk about that, Chewie.
The British invasion of comics was such a like cocksure sort of like brand-based thing. And so Alan Moore maybe, you know, likely was just being a little bit like flashy, kind of like being a little selfish, playing up the trippiness because it's his chance to write a Star Wars comic. It's so popular. And just the idea that like a bunch of people are going to read this crazy story about Star Wars and it's going to like trip them out and stuff like that. And they're going to think about Alan Moore. Like, I feel like maybe that's a part of the reason why these UK stories are so out there is because they're really just trying to like test the fences and see how far they can go with it.
And it seems like, at least based on like Grant Morrison and what they were talking about in Super Gods, like a lot of like artistic people jamming and rapping and like just trying cool, interesting things and like inspiring each other and other stuff. And so like, it's just, weird when that crosses over into Star Wars, which has such its own flavor where you're like, whoa. But like, other than that, it's not cool.
What's weird about this is if we had read these comics during the Splinter of Mind's Eye era, I would have been like, yeah, okay. But for some reason, because the existence of Empire,
right?
It's like, oh no, we know way more about this universe.
We know
now.
What Star Wars is.
Yeah, but for some reason, the more comics, if it was 1978 or whatever, I'd be like,
whoa,
they didn't know what they were doing. This is wacky. This is fun. But now I'm like, no, y'all had Star Wars. You knew what Star right. You knew what Star Wars was. But
I just don't think that the idea of lore, the idea of canon, the idea of things being accurate to the books or whatever. I think that is like, I think we're in an era pre that feeling. I feel like maybe that's another secret to this protoverse of like Star Wars canon is that like nobody was like, what? That doesn't make sense. Because like never had there been anything like this. Never had there been like a movie universe that captured everybody this way on this scale. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Star Wars took over the globe and it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And I feel like if I was the editor of like Star Wars Marvel and it was today and we were still doing this and these were the stories that were coming across my desk, I would be like, what the fuck are you trying to do? But at the same time, I'm glad they exist. You know what I mean?
I pulled up like, I just want to see if there's any more information about these because I'm just so curious. And so this is when they recollected as Devil Worlds, the first comic, this is the cover of the first issue. That is Luke super jumping. He has his green lightsaber. This is not at all, this is all post, this is like Return of the Jedi Luke. Does not exist in any of these comics.
Yeah, it's not even
it's
in.
It's just like a lie.
Yeah.
The cover. Like, this doesn't happen in the stories. This doesn't make any
maybe
sense
the
for this.
Ones that we didn't get.
No, these are, we've read all of them.
Really?
Those were the Devil Worlds.
That is so.
That's crazy that's Aphra.
I'm trying to like.
Dude, the Aphra books are, the comics are great.
I never stopped. I read the whole, everything up to Empire. I read like up to Last Jedi. I read everything.
Out of all the new stuff, especially comics,
no, it was Empire.
Aphra is fantastic.
Yeah, really fun. And even the second arc of it, like with the second run of it is pretty good.
Yeah.
That's the end of this. We only have, in addition to being halfway through the proto canon, we're also halfway through the original Marvel years now. There are six total trades of this. Mm-hmm. But before we get to number six, there are quite a few different things. We're going to do four next. Volume four of these comics next. Much shorter, much more direct. Just a bunch of issues of the Star Wars magazine in a row. Then we go into,
Lando?
Landoville.
Thank God, I'm ready.
And
I'm ready to get back to Lando. I miss our boy.
Yeah, so it's going to be collection three, and then it's going to be collection four. And then, first we're going to do Jedi.
Jedi's before Lando?
Yeah, it's time for Jedi.
Wait, so it's collection four.
Jedi.
Then Jedi.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then Lando Calrissian and the Mind Harp of Sharu.
Yes. By the way, speaking of Jedi, do we have a specific version for people to watch?
Of course there is. We're gonna do the same 4K 83 or whatever it is. We're going to watch the theatrical Return of the Jedi.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
With the Yep. It's going to have none of those CG big-nosed lounge singers. Yeah. None of that. No extra tentacles on the pit. It's just going to be good old-fashioned Jedi.
It's like a really, really cool, bold design.
Ooh,
that was like somehow subtle for being a giant mouth.
We're going to get to see Luke completely miss that kick.
Yep.
I'm really excited.
And we're going to see the novel by James Caan.
James Caan?
I mean, I don't know that it's that James Caan.
What you guys don't understand, though, is that his kick doesn't miss. It's a force kick.
Right.
Oh,
my bad.
It has like a big hitbox.
Right.
Yeah. Is what you're saying.
Yeah, the iframes are off.
You know how he like pushes his hand out and he doesn't touch him and they go pushing? It's a kick.
Right. Yeah.
James Caan is a UCLA...
famed actor. Also really liked...
Also loved Jedi.
He's an emergency medical specialist who had a degree in medical studies from the University of Chicago, and he's most famous for writing the novelizations of Return of the Jedi, Poltergeist, Temple of Doom.
What?
Melrose... He also wrote for Melrose Place, and he wrote for TNG.
What?
Yeah.
He's like... what's the actor from, like...
And the Goonies. He wrote
The Hangover.
He wrote the Goonies book. What? The guy from The Hangover?
Yeah. Who was like a dentist turned actor.
Oh, Ed Helms.
No.
Oh, he just needs dental work. You're talking about Mr. Yeah, hello, bitches.
Ken Jeong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, the idea that he's like a medical guy then like dabbled in his real passion is like...
writing novelizations
basically the same
of
guy.
Famous blockbuster films. Basically what Ken Jeong does. Guys... thank you so much for listening to another episode of this. If you are a Patreon listener, head on over to patreon.com/SWOCBC. You can sign up. You can go, if you're already a member, you can go check it out. There's a free membership you can do to like just not miss any of the updates when you see when stuff happens, and you can read our little public updates and whatnot. Davis always puts out public Q&As for the Q&A episodes that we do, so you can ask us questions. So look out for one of those coming pretty soonish.
Yeah.
Pretty soonish.
Make them good.
Yeah. The onus is on
no uggos,
you.
All right? I don't want any
ugly
questions.
Yeah, no ugly questions. Hot questions only.
Only hot.
Only 9.5 and up.
9.5, just like Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to...
I have no reflective services in my house.
Yeah, so go check that out.
But I'm told them.
But right now, live, is another episode of Inside the Insider, our show where we chronologically go through the Star Wars Insider, which has its own Zon Zone right now, where we're in the Lucasfilm magazine.
Tucker.
We're deep in to the Lucasfilm times, but it's like not till issue 23 or something like that that we get. So we'll get to the Star Wars Insider before we get to the Zon Zone.
Z-O-H-N-E.
Zon Zone.
The Zone.
The Zone.
Zone.
It's, the Zone. It works Timothy better Zone. Written than it does sound.
Yeah.
The Timothy Zone.
The Zone.
We'll see in the Zone, halfway to the Zone.
I love it.
Yeah, we'll see you guys later. Davis, hit him with the tagline.
What is... you can't put me on the spot.
It's keep your droids close.
That's... No, that was...
keep your droids close and...
and what?
And keep your droids close. And
I
keep your droids close.
Keep your droids close. And
stop pointing at me. What is the
keep your droids close?
You're already fucking up. It was keep your friends close No, and but, your droid's closer.
Wait, but that's the old show.
That's the old show.
Keep your droids close.
And
fucking don't throw shapes, or else you might create very weird stormtroopers.
I mean, you could have just said don't throw shapes.
Yeah, okay. Solid. Thank you for that. Everybody, this is the Star Wars Old Cannon Book Club.
Can't
you guys
put me
are the
on
best.
The spot like that.
Star Wars is the best. Davis is the best. And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.
The Star Wars Old Cannon Book Club is made possible by contributions from our listeners at patreon.com/SWOCBC. Thank you for your support. This month's Patreon Masters of the Force are Sovereign, Ian Berenade, Trevor Isom, Patrick Rowland, Matt Wars 56, Amy W, Jazz Owl, Evan Alexander Guillen, Peacetime Mando, and Metroid Mike. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with a discussion about our next selection, Star Wars, The Original Marvel Years, Volume 4, by David Michelin, Walter Simonson, Joe Duffy, and Tom Palmer, among others. This episode was edited by Alex Del Campo and Alex Fossiani. The theme song is Venus, the Bringer of Peace by Gustav Holst, performed by the U.S. Air Force Heritage of America Band. Original show art by Jackie Whistler. See you next time.